Good evening, friends. Welcome once again to Valley Writers Read, a radio show where Valley authors get to read their literary prose. And tonight, boy, have we ever got a treat for you. Fresno author Oscar G. Williams has a real spellbinder for us. It's entitled Harassment, all about what's going on down at the office. And here is Gabriella Lawson to read Oscar Williams' story, Harassment.
You must understand, the touch of your hand makes my pulse react, that it's only the thrill of boy meeting girl, opposites attract. It's physical, must try to ignore that it means more than that. Oh, what's love got to do? Got to do with it. What's love but a second-hand emotion? What's love got to do? Got to do with it. Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken?
Harassment. Sheila, would you come into the office? Sheila smiled and asked, what do you have in mind? Believe it or not, it's business. I'll be right in, baby. Sheila closed the intercom and went to the door of Paul's office. She knocked, looked around to see who was looking, smoothed her skirt and went in. She closed the door and stood there, hands on hips, head held high. Are you sure this is a business call?
Sit down, sweets.
Sheila walked across the room, her long legs swaying her perfect hips. Her long blonde hair accentuated the motion with a synchronized sway of its own. She sat down on Paul's couch and patted the space next to her.
Business, insisted Paul.
I have never seen you so standoffish. I don't know if I like you this way.
Sweets, there is a time for work and a time for play.
Can I quote you on that?
Paul rocked his chair back. I see a problem coming over the horizon.
Your wife found out about us? Sheila asked anxiously.
No, it doesn't really concern us. On the other hand, it involves both of us.
Sheila looked at Paul with a disgusted look of confusion.
I'm sorry, sweets, no more games. Here is the situation. There's been a lot of talk about a merger or takeover of the company. If this happens, I don't see a future for myself.
How about me? Sheila asked.
I don't know. You're my secretary. If they do away with me, it's possible they may place you someplace else in the company, or you might have to go too.
How do you know this takeover thing will affect you?
If the company is taken over, the new owners are going to bring in their own management team. They're going to want their own man as chief of their advertising department. What I'm going to ask you to do may sound crazy, but I've given it a lot of thought. We could make a lot of money, and we don't have to depend on anyone to give us anything.
You want to rob a bank? Sheila joked.
Don't be funny, I'm serious. This company is a privately owned company. It's owned by old man Bridgeport and his folks. Basically, he runs the place the way he wants to. The rest of the folks are just hanger-ons. You know, sit back, draw a check, and spend most of their time at the club playing tennis and golf. The weak link in the system is the old man. He is an MCP from way back.
What's an MCP?
Doll, where have you been hiding? MCP means male chauvinist pig.
I still don't know what you mean.
An MCP is a guy who thinks all women should be at home, barefoot and pregnant. In other words, he doesn't think women should be in the workplace. Why do you think we don't have any women managers? He wouldn't hire a woman manager if she had the best credentials in the world.
What does this have to do with us making a lot of money?
It all has to do with you. You're going to file a sexual harassment suit against me and the company.
Are you crazy? You better lay off the stuff for a while. I think it has messed up your mind.
Just listen, Paul said. If the company mergers, I am out of here without anything except a gold watch.
A gold watch?
Forget the watch. I want you to file a sexual harassment claim. If things go as I see it, old man Bridgeport is going to shine you off. He's not going to take your complaint seriously. That's just what we want. I probably will have to fire you.
Fire me? Sheila exclaimed. Is this some kind of trick to get me out of here?
No, no, my love. Don't give me that my love stuff.
You don't want me anymore.
I do want you. I can't do without you. Please, just listen.
Okay.
Let me finish telling you the whole plan before you jump to conclusions. We're going to act like we've broken up. Our thing is no big secret. I'll publicly harass you by trying to make you come back to me. I'll threaten to fire you. You'll go see old man Bridgeport. You'll tell him that I won't leave you alone. You'll tell him that I threatened to fire you. Got it so far?
Where does all the money come in?
You'll see. Do you follow me so far?
Yes.
Okay. I think the old man is going to call me in and give me the you've been a bad boy talking. Boys will be boys. That's what he did when Charles and Stephanie's thing went public. They kind of cooled it so nothing ever came of it. But you're not going to back down. You're going to insist he do something. After a couple of visits from you, he's probably going to tell me to straighten things out. That's when I fire you. You get a lawyer and file a harassment claim against me and the company for a few million dollars.
Sheila sat there staring at Paul for the longest time. She finally said, "You're serious."
"I'm very serious," Paul said. "I don't think it will ever get to court. Bridgeport may not be very smart, but his lawyers will probably talk him into an out-of-court settlement. If he's dumb enough to insist on a court trial, we're going to score really big. But a settlement of at least a couple million won't hurt. It won't even be coming out of his pocket because his insurance will end up paying for it."
"I don't like this," Sheila said. "What if we get caught?"
"We can't get caught. You and I will be the only ones who know the truth. I'm going to be out of a job. Don't you want to help me? What's wrong with us finally ending up in some country like Switzerland or France?"
"You said us."
"I meant us. When all of the dust has settled, Molly's going to look up and you and me will be long gone."
"You've never mentioned leaving Molly before."
"I don't know what you see down the road, but I've been thinking a lot about you and me. I see us together in that long-range picture."
"Oh, Paul, you do? I've been thinking sort of the same thing, but I was afraid to ever bring it up. I'll do anything you say."
"Thanks, dear. We'll work out all the details later."
Before Sheila closed the door behind her, she said, "I hope your little plan doesn't get us put in the pokey. I don't look good in stripes."
The following week, Paul and Sheila met for dinner one evening and worked out the details to their plan. Paul paid Sheila to come into his office. She went into the office and left the door open. Paul yelled at her to close the damn door. She closed the door, and their argumentative voices could be heard above the din of the typing pool. Some of the pool typists exchanged knowing glances. The voices quieted down. Sheila opened the door and fled down the aisle toward the ladies' room. Paul appeared at the door. He took a hard look at her fleeing back and slammed the door closed. In the next couple of weeks, they had another encounter. One day, Paul confronted Sheila in the company cafeteria. He told her in a loud voice he was tired of the way she carried on and was fed up with her not coming to work. She told her girlfriends at work that she just didn't want to come to work because she couldn't stand it anymore. They advised her to report what Paul was doing to her. She took their advice and made an appointment to see Mr. Bridgeport.
"I have an appointment to see Mr. Bridgeport tomorrow," Sheila said into the phone.
"That's great. You know what to say," Paul said.
"Yes, but that old man scares me."
"That's good. You're supposed to be scared. Scared of him, scared of me, and distrustful of all men."
"Oh, Paul, I really am scared."
"I know, honey. I'm sorry to put you through this, but the plan is working. A little bit longer and the wheels will be put in motion, and we can just sit back and watch."
"I love you," Sheila said.
"I love you too, pumpkin," Paul replied. He hung up his car phone and sat back to relax and make the commute home. Sheila sat in a high-backed chair at the opposite side of the office from Mr. Bridgeport. She cast furtive glances around the office as Mr. Bridgeport sat like a stone behind his desk. She decided that his office was larger than her apartment. She felt strange, not only because she was in Bridgeport's office, but also because she felt funny dressed like she was. Sheila hadn't worn a dress like this since she was in elementary school. She had bought it just for this meeting. It came just below her knees, and the square neckline made her feel like a nun. Her hair was pulled back in a bun. Sheila dabbed at her tear-stricken eyes.
"Let me get this straight, Miss Hughes. It is Miss, isn't it?" asked Bridgeport.
"Yes, sir."
"You're telling me that Paul Black has been bothering you? I mean, I just have to say it, Miss Hughes. He wants sexual favors?
Even from across the room, Sheila could see his face turning red.
Yes, sir. I've told him again and again that I don't want anything to do with him. I want him to leave me alone so that I can do my job. He is a married man. He calls me into his office and tries to kiss me. He calls me at home and wants to come over. I can't take it anymore. Just yesterday, he threatened to fire me.
Bridgeport sat there for a long time.
I'll see what can be done about this. That's all for now.
Sheila wiped her eyes, thanked Bridgeport, and left the office. She made it a point to be still crying when she got back to her desk. The girls in the typing pool couldn't miss her torment. Bridgeport called Paul. After the call, Paul stormed out of the office and confronted Sheila. He yelled at her.
What the hell have you been telling Bridgeport? He wants to see me about some kind of lies you've told him about me.
Sheila grabbed her handkerchief and took off for the ladies' room, leaving a loud wail behind her. The typing pool was quiet. Paul looked over at the faces looking at him and yelled,
"Mind your own business and go back to work."
He stormed off to Bridgeport's office. Bridgeport's secretary told Paul to go in. Paul entered the office, quietly closing the door behind him. Bridgeport didn't look up from his newspaper.
"Sit down, Paul."
Paul sat in a high-back chair across the room from Bridgeport's desk.
"Paul, it seems you may have a little problem," Bridgeport said. "I had a visit from a Miss Hughes. She is your secretary, I understand?"
"I've had her for almost 2 years. I should have gotten rid of her a long time ago, but I felt sorry for her."
"What do you mean?"
"She has a man problem. Every time she thinks a man is looking at her, she starts acting like he's chasing her. Ugh, I've seen many a guy run the other way because of the way she acts."
"Have you and her had anything going? You know what I mean."
"No way. Have you seen how she dresses like some kind of hussy? And a couple of times she tried to come on to me."
"What are you talking about, man? She looked like some kind of nun when she came into my office,"
Bridgeport protested. Paul could see Bridgeport was getting a little warm under the collar. "I had thought something was strange about the way she dressed today. I thought she was going to a wedding or a funeral. I've never seen her dress like that before."
"Look, I don't have time for this kind of foolishness. I don't know what kind of game she's playing, but it's your problem to deal with it. Do I make myself clear?"
"Yes, sir," Paul blurted out. "I will take care of it." When Paul returned to his office, he passed Sheila's desk without a word. She didn't look up. After he got to his desk, he paid Sheila to come into the office. The pool typist could hear Paul yelling and cursing Sheila at the top of his lungs. Sheila burst from the office, grabbed her coat, and fled from the building. Paul went to the open door, looked across the aisle at the pool typist, and slammed his door closed. On the way home, Paul dialed Sheila. She answered the phone with a question.
"Is this Mr. Meany calling?"
Paul chuckled. "How did I do? Do you think it sounded real?"
"I think I'm seeing another side of you. Down deep inside, you're a... what's that name you called Bridgeport? Oh, yeah, an MCP.
"Dear, I was just trying to play the role. I think we have the old boy in the bag already."
"You do?"
"You did a better job than I thought you could. He thinks you tried to con him with your nun outfit."
"Nun outfit? What are you talking about?"
"Old man Bridgeport said you dress like a nun. When I told him you normally dress quite different, he got pissed. I think he believed you were trying to put something over on him." "I want you to stay home a couple of days. You see, you're too embarrassed to go to work. Then I want you to call Bridgeport's office and try to make an appointment to see him again. If he agrees to see you, give me a call. But I don't think he wants to see you again."
"Okay," Sheila said. "I love you."
"I love you too, Pumpkin. Gotta go now. Gotta concentrate on my driving." Paul hung up. Things were looking good. Sheila did not go to work for 2 days. She called Bridgeport's office and asked to speak with Bridgeport. After a pause, his secretary came on the line and said he was not available. Sheila then asked Bridgeport's secretary to have him call her when he was available, and she gave the secretary her home phone number. She waited until the next day and called Bridgeport's office again. She got the same results. Because of Sheila's position as Paul's secretary, she had access to certain information. This included Bridgeport's private number, which did not go through his secretary. The only time the secretary would answer it would be if Bridgeport was out of the office. Sheila dialed Bridgeport's private number. It rang 3 times before Bridgeport answered.
"Bridgeport here."
"Mr. Bridgeport, this is Sheila Hughes. I have..."
Bridgeport cut her off.
"Young woman, I resent the fact that you have used my private number for your personal use."
"I left a message with your secretary asking you to call me. I must talk to you."
"Miss Hughes, there is nothing for us to talk about. You made your bed and you must sleep in it."
"Mr. Bridgeport, you're the only one who can help me."
I can't and will not help you, Miss Hughes. Do not call me again on my private line.
Bridgeport hung up. Sheila smiled. She dialed his number again. It rang, but no one answered it. Sheila knew that Bridgeport was probably on the intercom to his secretary, telling her what had happened and instructing her to answer his line until something was done with her. Sure enough, after about 8 rings, the secretary answered the phone.
Mr. Bridgeport's office. Hello? Is anyone there?
Sheila hung up. Later that evening, Paul spoke on his car phone.
You did good, Sheila. You might have found a new profession. I didn't know you could be such a convincing actress. Old man Bridgeport was livid. After your call, he didn't call me up to his office. He hightailed it down to my office. He blasted into my office and let me have it with both barrels. Either I get rid of you, or I'm going to be out the door. I know the pool typist heard his tirade, as well as my acting secretary. He left the door open, and he was bellowing like a stuffed walrus.
This just seems too easy, Paul. Do you really think we can make a lot of money this way?
Baby, it's in the bag. That pompous fool played right into our hands. Don't start getting weak knees now. We're almost there.
If you say so. What do we do now?
I have to fire you.
Sheila complained, whined, sobbed, and finally said,
I know that's part of the plan, but when you say it, it still hurts.
You are going to get plenty of salve to heal your pain when the old fool has to pay up. Tomorrow I'm going to have the human resources people start your removal because of job abandonment. When you try to come back to work, they'll have the security guard escort you to their office. They will give you your personal belongings, take your badge, give you your walking papers, and escort you to the entrance. Of course, during this time, you'll be crying and asking them why they're persecuting you when it's me who's been harassing you.
Why do I have to put on this show?
When your trial comes up, the human resources people will be your witnesses. They will have to testify how distraught you were, how you claimed it was me who should be punished for harassing you.
Okay, Sheila sighed. One more day on the stage.
Goodbye, pumpkin. Love ya.
Paul hung up his car phone and breathed a sigh of relief. Then he snapped his fingers.
I forgot to tell her about the lawyer.
Paul said,
Dial Sheila.
His car phone began to dial. Sheila answered.
Sheila, Paul here.
I would never have guessed.
Look, baby, I forgot to tell you about the lawyer. I want you to go to Schuster and Schuster. I hear they are the best lawyers around in the harassment type of civil suits. I know it's going to be hard, but from now on you're going to be an ultra-conservative dresser and very demure.
What's demure?
Look it up, because that's what you're going to be until we get on the plane for Europe, or maybe some warmer climate. Did you point me out to your neighbor when I was sitting across the street from your apartment in my car?
Yes.
You made it a point to tell your girlfriends at work how upset you were because I kept after you and how Bridgeport wouldn't help you?
Yes, I did. I laid it on real thick.
Oh, yeah, don't forget to tell the lawyer. You had to change your phone number because I kept calling you at home. Goodbye, hon. I'm going to miss you like the dickens, but it's best we don't see each other or talk to each other until it's all over.
This is going to be the hardest part for me. You know how crazy I am about you.
Sheila kissed the microphone on the phone and hung up.
Miss Hughes, why did you choose our office to represent you?
Sheila looked up from the floor at the lawyer. She dabbed at her eyes and said,
I didn't know what to do. After I was fired, I just sort of fell apart. A couple of my friends told me that I shouldn't let them treat me the way they did, and I should get a lawyer. One of them recommended your firm. I think she dated a lawyer who suggested to her that I come to you.
Before I can make a commitment to represent you, I must understand what makes you believe that you've been sexually harassed.
Sheila hesitantly, slowly explained each of the events leading up to her being fired in retaliation for going to Mr. Paul Black's boss. She told about her attempts at getting her job back by calling Bridgeport and her ex-boss and the humiliation of being escorted into the human resources office where she was given her walking papers, her belongings, and escorted out of the building. The lawyer, Mr. Darman, was making notes as she talked. Darman said,
On the surface, it seems that you may have a case. I want to have a few things checked out before I can give you an answer. Give me a couple of days and I'll get back to you.
Sheila rose from her chair and grasped his outstretched hand with both of hers.
Thank you, Mr. Darman. I'll be waiting for your call.
She scurried out of the office. After Sheila had left Darman's office, he hit his intercom.
Tom, it seems like we may have a hot potato. You know Bridgeport, Inc. Bridgeport could have a problem. Yeah, the Hughes woman. I'll fill you in later. I want Jerry to check some things out.
Darman switched over to his secretary.
Angela, get me Jerry on the phone.
2 days later, Darman's secretary called Sheila. She informed her that Schuster & Schuster was accepting her case and set up an appointment for a meeting with her attorney, Mr. Darman. After Sheila hung up the phone, she wanted to call Paul so badly that it hurt, but she fought the temptation. Sheila met with Darman on Thursday. He asked her a number of questions and finally stated,
"I'm not questioning any portion of the validity of your story, but I have to ask if you and Black had any type of relationship outside of your business relationship."
Sheila looked at him with startled eyes and asked, "Do you mean like an affair or something like that?"
Darman said, "Yes. If you did and broke it off and he continued to pursue you against your will, your case would be just as strong. I have to ask the questions because if it should turn out that something had been going on between the two of you, the Bridgeport attorneys will make it a point to bring it up before a jury to try and paint you in a bad light."
Sheila looked Darman in the eyes. "I know it was wrong. Mr. Black is married. It just started. After a short while, I broke it off. I just couldn't do that anymore. That's when the problem started. He wouldn't leave me alone. I even threatened to tell his wife. He said I'd regret it if I did."
Sheila lowered her gaze to the floor. "Thanks for telling me. We can deal with that. I just didn't want it to come as a surprise later on. I want to level with you so that you won't get any surprises. It may be a painful and lengthy process."
"How will it be painful?"
"You might call this process a war. We are out to win. They'll be out to win. Someone has to be destroyed in order for the other to win. We're going to paint a picture of your ex-boss, Black, as a sexual pervert trying to take advantage of his position to wrest sexual favors. We intend to show that the company condoned this type of behavior. On the other side of the coin, I don't like to use this term, but it says it all, they will try and picture you as some kind of harlot. They will have their investigators trying to dig up any kind of thing in your past which they can use against you."
"This sounds like a personal attack on me."
"It is. Even though our suit will target both your former boss and the company has no face, and to some degree it will shield your ex-boss. We will shield you as much as possible, but you don't have the anonymity of a company. You're a single face with a single name, and they will be attacking you. Have I scared you to death? Do you still want to press on?"
Sheila sat there as if contemplating what Darman had said. She knew the answer immediately. The answer was, of course, yes. But she had to be careful and remember to play the part of a wronged, not too strong or bright, bimbo. She hesitantly responded,
"I want to go on."
Schuster & Schuster filed a civil suit against Bridgeport, Inc. and Paul Black. Sheila had a number of meetings with her attorney. Each time they met, he shared with her information which their investigator, Jerry, had gathered. He had confirmed that her neighbor had seen Paul Black sitting across the street from her apartment a number of times. The investigator had visited the homes of the employees she had named, and they had confirmed they had heard Paul belittle and berate her. They expressed a feeling that it had nothing to do with her work. Some of them speculated there may have been something between Sheila and Black. About 3 months had gone by when Sheila got a call from Darman.
"I think they want to settle. Trial is set for month after next, but I don't think they want to face a jury. We sued for $4.5 million. I have no idea what they're going to offer at this time. I think we should give them a chance to make an offer. Meeting and talking with them won't damage your case. It could bring the whole thing to a quick conclusion."
"It seems okay to me. I don't want to go through a court trial if I don't have to. I just want them to pay for the way they treated me."
"I'll keep you informed," Darman said, and hung up.
The doorbell rang. Paul went to the door. There was a man in plain clothes with a uniformed policeman. Paul asked,
"Is something wrong?"
The man in plainclothes said,
"I'm Detective Rand."
He showed Paul his badge.
"This is Officer Cooley. Are you Paul Black?"
"Yes, yes I am. What's going on?"
"Do you know a Miss Sheila Hughes?"
"She used to be my secretary."
"Miss Hughes was murdered 3 days ago. She was shot. The gun left at the scene of the murder is registered to you. You are under arrest for the murder of Miss Sheila Hughes. Please turn around and put your hands behind you."
"Are you crazy?" Paul sputtered.
"Please turn around, sir," Officer Cooley said.
He grasped Paul's wrist and turned him around. Paul tried to push away. Detective Rand grabbed his other arm and they pinned his arms behind his back. Officer Cooley put the cuffs on Paul.
"Take him to the car and read him his rights," said Detective Rand.
Officer Cooley marched Paul to the car. Detective Rand made a casual search of the house. He had obtained a search warrant, but with the smoking gun in hand, there wasn't much more he needed. He closed the door and went to the patrol car. Paul was in the back seat.
Please let me leave a note for my wife. She won't know what has happened. She's at a friend's house.
Detective Rand ignored Paul.
Did you read him his rights?
He asked Officer Cooley.
Yes, I did.
Mr. Black, you're going to be taken to the city jail and booked. After that, you can make one phone call. Do you understand?
Yes, but this is a horrible mistake. I haven't seen Sheila for months.
After Paul had been booked, he called an attorney he knew. He told the attorney what had happened and asked him to help get him out. He also asked him to contact Molly and let her know what had happened. The attorney assured him that he would take care of everything. After Paul had made his phone call, Detective Rand took him to a small room.
I'd like to ask you some questions, Mr. Black.
I'm not going to say anything unless my lawyer is present.
Have it your way. This is an open and closed case. We found your weapon at the scene of the crime. It has your fingerprints on it, only your prints.
We have a soundproof motive.
We talked to the attorney representing her in the suit against you. We found his card and her belongings. Her neighbor said Miss Hughes showed him your car parked across the street from her apartment. You were stalking her. It's obvious you were trying to get into her panties. She didn't want anything to do with you. You fired her, but after she sued you, you had to get even. You went to her apartment and shot her. You panicked, dropped your gun, and fled the scene.
That's ridiculous, Paul yelled.
You don't have to say anything until your attorney gets here, but before you are taken to your cell, I just want you to know that you are dead meat.
Detective Rand went to the door, opened it, and summoned an officer.
Take him to his cell.
The officer led Paul away. The next morning, an officer came to Paul's cell and unlocked the door. He said,
Your wife and lawyer are here to see you.
He led Paul out of the cell and down the corridor. He ushered Paul into the small room and closed the door. Molly ran to him and embraced him. He half-heartedly embraced her.
Where is Bruce? Paul asked.
He's seeing about bail and talking to a detective. Oh, Paul, I don't know what to do. Bruce called me last night and told me what had happened. I would have come down last night, but Bruce said they wouldn't let me see you. I told Bruce that you didn't do it. I told him I did it. He wouldn't believe me.
Molly, why would you say such a crazy thing?
I did it, Paul. I killed her. I told that Detective Rand this morning, but he wouldn't believe me either. He said it wasn't unusual for a desperate spouse to confess in order to save a loved one.
Molly, you don't have to make up this story. I'm innocent. Bruce will get me out of this mess.
Paul, they are convinced you killed her. Listen to me. I did kill her. It was an accident. She was going to ruin your career and our lives with her lawsuit. You kept saying that over and over. I decided to go see her and talk some sense into her. I put on my coat and gloves and started out the door. I don't know why, but I thought of the gun you keep in the desk. I went back in and got it. I knocked on her door. She opened it. I said, I'm Molly Black. She said, Molly, what are you doing here? And I said, I want to talk to you. She invited me in. After she closed the door, she offered me a seat. I told her I would rather stand. Oh, Paul, I'm so dumb. I didn't know what to say. I just blurted out, why are you trying to ruin Paul and me? She said, you don't understand. I'm not trying to hurt Paul. I screamed at her, you liar. He won't have a job or a career when you finish with him. She grabbed my shoulders and pushed me against the door. I tried to push back, but she wouldn't let me move. I yelled at her to let me go. She slapped me. I don't know how the gun got in my hand. The next thing I knew, I had it pressed against her stomach. She looked down at it. She grabbed my hand and started to push it aside when the gun went off. It was the loudest sound I've ever heard. I dropped the gun. She fell over backwards. I ran out of the apartment and went home. You were out. I burned the gloves and the coat I had on because there was blood on them. I put the ashes in the trash. I told that detective all of this. He was very sympathetic, but he insisted I had made it all up.
My God, you did kill her. My prints were the only ones on the gun because you had on gloves. Molly, do you know what you've done?
Molly nodded her head. Yes, I do, but I didn't mean to.
Paul slumped down into one of the chairs next to the table and buried his head in his arms. Molly whimpered in the background. As Molly walked to her car from the police station, a smile crossed her lips. She raised her head and quickened her pace. She mumbled to herself, "Nobody makes a fool of Molly. Not my stupid husband or his whore."
Right.
That was Gabriella Lawson reading Oscar G. Williams' story, Harassment. What we start out with is office manager Paul having an affair with Sheila, his secretary. He's got some really big-time ideas of how the two of them can get super rich rather quickly without really breaking any laws, after which, well, they might just take their millions and run away to some foreign country. What they intend to do is to let everyone down at the office believe that he was harassing her, he acting out the part of the stalker and she the mistreated. When she complains to their boss, he just brushes her off, but that just strengthens her case. So she hires the best lawyer in town, and he's already talking about a $4 million payoff. But there's one thing Paul didn't count on. His wife, Molly. She thought that Sheila was going to ruin her husband's life. So with Paul's gun in hand, she goes to see Sheila, the two of them getting to a fight, and Molly shoots her. But the police think Paul did it. After all, it was his gun. And even when Molly confessed, they thought she was just covering for him. The moral being, it's just not too smart to have affairs down at the office in the first place. Friends, our author tonight is Oscar G. Williams, who lives in Fresno and has written two books, A Token View from Inside the IRS and Flying High. He's also been a guest columnist for the Fresno Bee. He attributes much of his success as a writer to the classes he's taken from one of Valley Writers Reed's favorite authors, Bonnie Hearn Hill. Thank you for your story tonight, Oscar Williams. We hope you're working on some more stories for us for years to come. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online to kvpr.org and link up with archived audio. Next week, our writer reader will be Margaret Irwin. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.